Okay. Yes, I will use the mic because I know my voice sounds a little not so good now, but yesterday it was non-existent. So glad to at least have this much. If you have your Bibles, go ahead and find Mark chapter 3. And I'm going to give you something from there. While you're turning there, because some of you we haven't met before. So I'm an Australian. You may have possibly picked that up. I don't know, my voice is how much with the flu, well, that it's affecting that. But so I was fifth generation Australian. Obviously, family's been there a long time. None of my family was saved. I got saved as a teenager, and then went into the ministry in my early 20s. I'm married. I have three children. They're grown up and doing okay with the Lord. And pastored a church in Australia, in Brisbane, Australia. So God called me to go there. It was a church that had been there a few years, but was in a little bit of trouble. There was about 30 people there, and they were about 6 months behind in the mortgage payments of the church. They're about to lose the land they're on. But I was very certain that God had told me to go there. I remember they said to me, they said, "We want you to come. And we can pay you $300 a week, but we can only guarantee it 6 months because a member has guaranteed it." And the rent we paid at the time was $275 a week. So, the maths didn't make sense, but it really made sense because the Lord just said, go. And some things are like that. You're going to have to learn to discern what is crazy and what is actually God. And they'll look really close sometimes. You'll have to work out what that is. If it's the Lord, it will never fail. It's the bottom is not going to drop out of it. And no matter how it looks, if you'll cast the net, you'll catch the fish. All right? But if it's crazy or you've miscalled it, then you might find you're on your own with that. And probably we've all done that at some time. So you have to discern that. So I went there. There was 30 people there in that church. After 1 month, I grew the church to 20 people, and then after that, God just began to add to us. Very unusual things happened, particularly for Australia. The church grew to several hundreds after that, over a number of years. And then about 18 years ago, God called me to go to Thailand, which I was not expecting to do. I was not. God really had to change some things in my heart. I always supported missions, and I was glad that others went. But I had no intention that that would be me. And to be honest, I really did not even have any passion or feelings towards going. I was just very Aussie, Australian. Australia had a lot of needs, and my focus was on that. But God did some things that I won't sort of get into right now, led me to Thailand, and we were certain it was the Lord. I didn't go on deputation. I just felt the Lord told us to just go. So there was one church said they would support us, and we just went and trusted the Lord, and there's some stories with all of that. Joe was our first convert. His Thai name is not Joe. It's Amnai Kamsong, but Joe is just easy. He didn't know. I remember the first time I brought him to America with me, he met somebody called Joe. And he said, "Oh, they have a Thai name." And I said, "No, that's not a Thai name. That's like there are many people called that here." He said, "But it comes from Thailand." I said, "No, it comes from here. It's them. And it somehow it got over there." But Joe was our first convert, and God's done a lot of things in his life. He's married, has a boy, 15. Grace is 13, and or 14 is she, and doing really well. So that's a little bit of who I am. So I've been in Thailand for the last 18 years, and we've seen a lot of great things happen by God's grace, unusual things. Many missionaries have struggled, to be honest, in Thailand. A lot of times what you'll find is when you read on the mission board somebody's name and it says Thailand, about 70% of the missionaries in Thailand do not work with Thai people. They just find it's too difficult. So they live in Thailand, but they'll be reaching Burmese people on the border, or Laos people on the border, or they're involved in a printing ministry, or they're doing something else. They live in Thailand, but they're not working with Thai people. It's considered a difficult place. I don't think anywhere's an easy place. I don't think anybody has an easy place. I don't really believe that exists. But we've seen Thai people coming to Christ, reaching other Thais. And so, that's just a little bit of who I am. How did I get here? I was invited over. And so we arrived last week. I have about 14 days here, and we'll get back to Thailand and get on with what God has us to do. So Mark chapter 3, we'll read verses 31 to 35, and I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the testings that come to people who want to do something for the Lord. And I'm going to say that it will be helpful for you to maybe try to remember some of this, because some of these things may not have happened to you yet. And the yet is important there. It may not have happened to you yet. And there's always a danger when something has not happened to you yet, or it is not seemingly relevant to your life presently, that you can be a little bit dismissive of that. It's not that you don't say it's not true, but you don't really take hold of it in any kind of deep way. You just kind of give a nod of, mm-mm-mm. But what happens when that comes to you, if you have not afore understood that or been prepared for that, it can have devastating effects on what is going to happen to you at that point. So the opportunity of being a little younger, some of you are, while you're learning, is you get an opportunity now to glean some things and put it in your war chest for when you go out. Okay, things that you may not be using right now, but you take hold of that and you hang on to that, knowing at some point you're going to have to open that box and pull out that thing and use that wisdom, use that truth, remember that thing that was said to you at that time, because it could make the difference between your survival and your end. And so that's your opportunity now. I would also say to you that it's very wise to value wisdom and to understand that wisdom is not easily found. Okay, it's not hanging from every bush. It's not around every corner. You'll hear a lot of things, and you'll hear some occasional wise things. And so learn to value wisdom. And I would say to you that if you're not doing it already, start praying that God would give you wisdom. And you just have an honest conversation with God. And you might need to see God, I'm just a bit of a fool, to be honest. There's just a lot of things I don't understand. But Lord, you're wise and you know. And you said that if we asked, you'd give it. And so I'm asking, would you give that to me? And wisdom is something that God can give a kind of an anointing with that. He can give a special touch. Of course, the book, the Bible, that is wisdom. It's the Word of God. But value wisdom is getting harder to find in our day. There's a lot of noise and a lot of static. But to actually hear some things that are like, that's becoming harder to find. All right, in Mark chapter 3 from verse 31, I'll read through to verse 35. It says, "Then came his brethren and his mother, and standing without sent unto him, calling him. And the multitude sat about him, and they said unto him, Behold, thy mother and thy brethren without seek for thee. And he answered them, saying, Who is my mother or my brethren? And he looked round about on them which sat about him and said, Behold, my mother and my brethren. For whosoever shall do the will of God, the same is my brother and my sister and mother." In John chapter 7 and verse number 5, it says, "For neither did his brethren believe in him." So this is very early on in the Lord's ministry, and it was kind of one of the tests that came to him. The whole of chapter 3 is full of difficult things. I think sometimes when we think about our Lord, because we know who he is and we know where he is, and we understand, you know, the end of the story, and we understand some things that are going to happen not too far away, sometimes what happens is I think we diminish his humanity in the sense of that we may think he just kind of got through things easy and it didn't affect him like it probably would affect us. And the danger with that is that we might miss some lessons. We might not understand. But there was just a lot of things happening here in this chapter. He had set out, well, he'd ordained the 12, and that's there in the chapter. In verse 21 it says, "And when his friends heard of it, they went out to lay hold on him, for they said, he's beside himself." His friends questioned his mind. It says the scribes, which came, verse 22, came down from Jerusalem, said, "He hath Beelzebub, and by the prince of devils casteth out devils." So there was a lot of opposition to the Lord when he set out to do what God had called him to do. And I want to have you understand that that will be your lot also. Okay, if you, as you set out to do what the Lord has asked you to do, you're going to face various tests, and you're going to have some opposition. In 1 Corinthians 16 and verse 9, the Apostle Paul said, "For a great door and effectual is opened unto me, and there are many adversaries." And so you find that opportunity and opposition are often found in the same place. Now, we would rather have one and not the other. We would rather have the first part of the verse and just stop there. But the truth of it is, you won't survive if you don't understand this, because it will knock you off your feet, but worse, it'll wound your spirit. And if you're not expecting these things, you might put a wrong interpretation on what opposition means. You might say, "I picked the wrong place." You might question, "Did you hear the voice of God accurately?" You might say, "Was she really the one I was supposed to marry?" You might start revisiting things that you hadn't revisited before. Okay, and seriously, that does happen to people. And so you're going to find that opportunity and opposition are found in the same place. I could tell you that is true in Thailand, but it's true everywhere. It's true everywhere. Consider that Nehemiah, when he went out, and we know the story there. He prayed, and he got the king's blessing to go and do what he believed he was meant to do. He not only got the king's blessing, he got the king's provisions to go out and do what he was supposed to do. But when he got there, he found out that there were opponents there. And that's what you're going to find. You'll have the king's blessing, and you'll have the king's provisions. You'll have everything you need, but you will have some opposition, and you will have some opponents. And sometimes it will come from unexpected sources. And when it comes from unexpected sources, that can be particularly discouraging. So you might say, you know, okay, I get it. I get it that these scribes are saying what they're saying. But hey, my own family. Well, how about this? My own church. You know, my own brethren. You know, I mean, I expect it from out there, but that this would come from here. And that can really shake you. It can really shake you. And what I'm trying to show you, it's really not that unusual. You're going to have to be ready for that. And by the way, you're going to have to handle it with a godly spirit, because these things cannot be contended with while you're in the flesh. Okay, this is not something that you will be able to deal with when you're not in a right spirit with people and with God. I often tell people who are under an assailing, humility is your shield. Okay, I know you want to rise up. I know you want to answer back. I know you have the ability to damage those who are damaging you. But humility is your shield. Just humble yourself and God will defend you. Humble yourself and God will answer the critics. Okay, humble yourself and God will speak for you. You won't have to speak for yourself. I generally take the policy that I will not defend myself. Now, I will defend others. I will defend my ties. I will defend the weaker. But I will not defend myself. I'll just take the hit on that and trust that to the Lord. And so you've really got to have a right spirit with that. Favor with God does not remove these tests. And you should not see it that, you know, if this is happening, that maybe God doesn't like you anymore. In fact, those who are highly favored of God will face the greater amount of tests. So I had a pastor say to me a few years ago, he said, Brother Shemesh, I've seen some things in your life. And he said, I wonder, would you pray for me, a pastor of a good sized church? He said, would you pray for me? Would you put your hands on me? And he said, would you pray that God would give me what he's given you? And I said, well, I went quiet for a moment, and he was sincere, and I understood his heart. And I said, well, I could do that. I said, but if you want what God has given me, what you perceive God has given me, then you have to understand that comes a certain way. And you really need to think about if you're willing for that part as well. And he said, why don't we wait on that for a little while? And I said, that's probably a good idea. And I'm not, it was a sincere, but listen, favor with God does not deliver you from these things. You're probably going to have more of it. And aren't these sobering things to be thinking about before we go out and serve the Lord? Isn't this part of really weighing the cost? And isn't this part of a transparent understanding of what it is to really serve the Lord and what might come to me? It's not something to live in fear of, because God will be with you, but it's something to understand. You think about Israel, you know, as they left Egypt and the sea parts. And I know we've read that, you know, just so many times, but it must have been quite a spiritual, it must have been quite an incredible thing to see. It must have been very reaffirming of God's power and of God's presence. And it must have been very reaffirming that, you know, we're on the right path and God is with us. And so they go through the parted sea. And then really it's just a short time and they come to bitter waters. And it's like, what is this? Well, this is your journey. Yeah, but, you know, like, this is not good. This is part of it. And then they get through that. And we, you know, then comes Amalek. What I'm trying to show you is this is not unusual. These are things you're reading every day. This is something that you have read many times. Sometimes there's a disconnect between what we read about someone else went through, but then we're very shocked when we go through that. And we act just stunned, like, what is happening? And it's like, hey, you've just read all of this, that all these servants of God had to contend with these things. You ought not think it strange, this trial that has come your way. So none of these things that we've said have the ability to stop you doing great things for God. Okay, these things in themselves, they're hard, but they can't stop you. None of these things can stop the blessing of God that he wants to put on you. Okay, you can stop you. Okay, the weight of a trial, the strength of a trial is not so much in the trial, it's in what the trial does to you. That's its potency. That's its poison. It is heavy to bear. It is grievous, and it is weighty. But the determining factor will not be the severity of the trial. The determining factor will be what you've allowed the trial to do to you. You know, somebody said, one author said, we have much more to fear from our successes than from our failures. Our failures typically drive us to God. Brokenness will drive you to God. And that's why God will allow you to have some brokenness. Okay, it is possible to lose Christ in the ministry. And it's a scary place to get to be in the ministry and to be serving and going and doing, and you lose connection with the Lord. I don't say you lose your salvation. I say you lose Christ. And suddenly you're doing all these things for other reasons. And when that happens, that becomes a very unhealthy, a very troubling place to be. Now, no preacher is going to stand up before his people and say, I lost Jesus. He's going to stand up and say what he always says. But it's going to be in his study when he's sitting on his chair staring out the window. And he starts thinking. And it's going to be what that does to him. Because serving the Lord does not work without you having a close relationship with the Lord. There is no substitute. Ministry without Christ will not go well. But if you do that, you won't be the first to have tried it. Right? You can lose your way. So these things are not, this will not stop you, but when these trials come, this was family that was coming. His brethren did not believe in him. Let me explain to you the cultural thing that was going on there. Joseph was dead. The earthly father was dead, and he's the oldest son. And in the culture of the East, when that happens, if you're the oldest son, you assume the role of provider, authority, everything over the family. It all falls on you. Okay, you're the oldest boy. You handle all that. And I guess he probably did do that for 30 years. He probably did serve his family and honor and do all the right things. But now he'd stepped away from that and was out following the will of God. They just didn't understand that. And that coming to him wasn't just, hi. It was, you go tell him that we are outside and he needs to come out here right now. That's what that was. You know, you just need to come on home. I don't know what you're doing. You know, but you just need to get yourself, you just need to come on back home with us. That's a test. You know, when that kind of thing comes from your own family, it's gonna challenge you. You know. When you get that from your own family. For many years when I was saved, both my parents were not saved, but my mum would often make comment to me. And it was always hard when your own mother says things that, you know, are very piercing about what you're doing and often just misunderstood. And you kind of want mum to just always be mum and just be there, but it just seemed, and I knew what she was saying wasn't true, and I knew what she didn't understand, but it still deeply hurt nonetheless. And so, you know, this was family. So there's a pattern of the enemy that I want you to be aware of. It's all through the Bible, and it likely is going to come at you on this angle as well. The pattern of the enemy is that he works to stopping things happen before they happen. Okay? So he wants to kill it before it starts. Because he can see when God's hand is on somebody, and he can see when God is going to use you for something, and he wants to stop that. He's been watching men for thousands of years. He understands how God works with people. He can pick up the spiritual wind. He knows what's going on. And when he sees that taking place in your life, here's what he wants to do. He wants to just bring it to an end before it even gets started. Okay? So the enemy will seek to abort something before it can happen. Right? So you go out on deputation and it's just a nightmare. And you just want to serve the Lord, and people are treating you just terribly, some, and you're discouraged. And the whole idea of this is, let's just finish you off before you even get there. Let's just wreck you right now. Let's just allow some things to happen that will make you question the whole process. Let's just put you in a place where the people who should be helping you are pushing you down. And let's see how you handle that. And we'll try to bring this to an end before you even get to where you're supposed to be. And there's a pattern with that. So there were numerous attempts to eliminate the Jews in their entirety before Christ came. And the way to understand that, it wasn't just about eliminating the Jews, it was to eliminate the people from whom would come the Christ. That's what that was about. It was targeted. It was deliberate. There's a pattern of that. You look at Herod in Matthew 2. Remember, he killed all the infants. And again, there's the pattern there is, let's eliminate this before it can happen. Let's try to just kill it all off. And that's a pattern of the enemy. And sometimes, you know, you can be in the ministry even quite a while, and God's about to elevate you to some new level. God's about to open up some fresh blessing on you that is going to be amazing. And the devil can see what's going on. So he wants to stop that before it even happens. And just shut this down so we don't have any more after Mark chapter 3. Let's just bring it to an end and try to stop. Satan's tempting Christ in Matthew 4 was about that. Because if he sins, then he cannot save us. And so again, it's let's try to stop this. Let's do something to stop this before it ever happens. And this thing with the family, I think, falls somewhat into that category of trying to stop something. Some of you may have heard of Clarence Sexton, a pastor, I don't know how far from here, but many years ago, I would say 25 or longer, I was over that part of America on my own, and it may have been 30 years ago, and I knew that the church was nearby, and I'd heard about the church and their college and other things. I named my son, my youngest son, I called Curtis after an evangelist by the name of Curtis Hudson that some of you would have heard of and some of you will not. So I named my son Curtis after that. Curtis was a very unusual name in Australia. Nobody's called Curtis. Curtis never meets another Curtis in Australia. It's just really an unusual name. And so Brother Sexton, I knew, was a friend of Curtis Hudson's. And so by this point, Brother Curtis Hudson had died already from cancer. And so I slipped into the church. It was midweek. Now, nobody knew me and nobody knew I was coming there. And I was on my own. And so it's a larger church, a few thousand. And it seemed quite full. And so I slipped in the back and went and just found a seat, you know, about midway in the church somewhere. And I thought I'd just catch the midweek meeting and, you know, I need to go out. And so I was sitting there. And a couple of people had greeted me. They were friendly. And so I sat there. Pastor Sexton got up to, they were about to start the service. And he came to the pulpit and he talked about something. And then he said, He said, let's have that brother from Australia come up here and pray. And I thought, oh, there's another. And so I'm looking around thinking, who's the brother from Australia? And honestly, I'm thinking there's someone else here. And finally, they came over to me and they said, it's you. And I didn't know him and he didn't know me and I didn't even know how they knew I was there. And so I got out of my seat and I walked all the way down the front. And then I, you know, went up and I prayed. And then I walked back down again and walked to my seat. The rest of the service happened and it was over and I was about to go. And a couple of men came over to me and they said, Brother Shemesh, Pastor Sexton would like to take you to lunch tomorrow if you were free. And I said, okay, I guess, yep, that'll be fine. They said, where are you staying? And I said, I'm here. And they said, okay, well, he'll be there at this time. And I said, oh, okay. So probably about 11 o'clock in the morning, this pickup truck, you know, arrives at the door of this little hotel I'm staying at. And I walk out and it's him. He's in the truck and he says, get in. And so I get in the vehicle and he says, well, let me show you around and drive you around the church property and whatever you want to see. And he's talking away and I'm just sitting there. And he said, I suppose you're curious as to why I want to have lunch with you. And I said, well, actually, I was. I was curious about that. And he said, it was when you prayed. And I said, okay. He said, Brother Wayne, you can learn a lot about a man by how he prays. And I went, Well, we traveled around a little bit. When he found out I'd named my youngest boy after Curtis, he called Tony Hudson up on the phone. He said, Tony, I got a man who named his boy after your papa and whatever. And then we went to lunch. And all this was very unusual. And so we go to lunch. And we're sitting down, just him and I at a table, and we ordered some food, and then he took I guess you call it the ketchup, that bottle, and he took the salt, and then he took the pepper, and there were some other bottles on the table, and he put them all out on a line, and I'm looking at it, and I'm looking at him. He said, Brother Wayne, he said, this is you. And I went, mm-hmm. And he said, when you pastor, he said, a lot of the time, he said, you people, a lot of your energy and your stress and what you're watching is going on down here. He said, actually, but down here will not hurt you. He said, it's up here what is close to you that will hurt you. And he was pointing out the fact that those closest to you have the greatest ability to affect you. Okay, which is like, yeah, but if that's not a good effect, what will happen to you? If that's a very negative effect, what's going to happen to you? And he was just and that's what I remember, by the way, from the whole thing. And then he dropped me off and he went, and I never saw him again the rest of my life. He reached out to me a couple of times through someone else about preaching there, but I wasn't able to go. But that was the takeaway for me. That was it. It's what's close to you can hurt you. All right, this was family. This is family. You know, there's a little bit of a divide between the West and other places. You know, in the West, we kind of live separate mostly. You know, we all have our own houses, our own yards, we live separate. Most of the world doesn't live how we live. Families stay together. They're a lot tighter, they're a lot closer, and they exert a lot more influence over each other. And so what was going on here, this was family. These people were in close. This was a test. Are you going to walk away from the will of God because your family are demanding things from you? Are you going to stop doing what God has asked you to do because your family don't support you in this? Or worse, are actively opposing you in what you're doing? Now, some people might say, my family said that, you know, they can live with it. But that's not everybody. And if it's not family, if it's someone else. So typically, Satan will choose as his first choice the people who can most affect your heart and your will. That will always be the first choice to get at you. So who might that be? Who might that be? A preacher called me up last year. And a good man, in a good marriage, good wife, good family, great church. And he called me up and he said, he was quite heartbroken. He was a little bit weepy on the phone. He said, my wife said something to me that she's never, ever said before. And I think he just needed someone to tell. And he told me and I went, ooh. He said, she's never, ever, ever said anything like that ever, ever before. Now, they have a great marriage and it's all well, but it was just one of those things where probably the devil was just able to use someone in an emotional moment in their life where they just fired off something that deeply cut the man of God or the husband, and it wounded him. Now, they got over it, and there was no threat to the marriage, but it illustrates the point. It's those that are closest to you have the ability to have the greatest effect upon you. So there's a great truth. So when you get to choose who is close to you, choose wisely. But if you can't choose and you just have to live with some of that, then you just at least need to understand the power that's involved with that. Okay, so he was trying to use family to get at the Savior. The devil will always look for the people who could most affect your heart and your will. Did you know Thailand is 96% Buddhist? It's a Buddhist state. Okay, there's no separation of religion and government. 96% Buddhist. About 3.5% Muslim, mostly down south on the Malaysian border. 1.5% is a bit of a mix of everything, some Catholics, some others. You know, the single biggest reason that Thai people will not come to Christ? Okay, it's not that they don't believe. It's not that they don't believe. Do you know that Buddhism teaches there's no heaven, there's no hell, there's no God? The theoretical teaching of Buddhism is why I tell people when you go to a country, you don't need to buy a book that studies the theory of the religious beliefs of those people. Get to know the people and you'll learn what they believe. Okay, that's a better way because it's always different. So Buddhism in theory says there's no heaven, there's no hell, there's no God. I have never met a Buddhist in 18 years of being in Thailand who did not believe in heaven and hell. They all believe it. They all believe it. They believe there's a hell. Joe's testimony the other night as an unsaved man, I knew I was going to go to hell. They were Buddhist. They don't know how to get to heaven. But the point of it is their rejection of the Lord is not because they don't believe. The single biggest factor that stops Thai people getting saved is their family. they cannot bring themselves to make a decision for Christ that will have them alienated from their family or have their family dismayed with them or hurt by what they did. They will sacrifice themselves and their eternity, and they're mad. It's crazy. They don't know what they're doing. But they'll sacrifice themselves to preserve their family's good feelings towards them rather than lose that. And they do that in lots of other ways, by the way. Sometimes they'll sacrifice one child to keep the other children in school and to keep them going. I won't go into all the details of that, but the single biggest reason is family. So what happens is when you're close to someone, you feel a deeper a sense of being obligated to those people. What you cannot do, listen carefully, what you cannot do, you cannot elevate anything above God. You cannot. Now, I've heard some people say that, and they've said it they've applied it incorrectly. All right. So if you're going to serve the Lord, you must have a clear understanding of what your priorities are. You know, you came into this world on your own, and you're going to go out the same way. The only thing that you have now, that you will still have when you leave, is God. Everything else will pass away. Okay, you won't even be living with your family in heaven. You know, you and her and the three kids, and it's not going to be that way. There's no marriage. There'll be a perfect love, everybody to the other. The marriage and family is something for now. It's now. It's God's provision for now. It's God's gift for now. It has many benefits now. Okay, but everything you have here is going to go. What you're going to have, you're going to have the Lord. Now, that doesn't diminish any of those other things. Okay, and I'll explain that in a moment. We're not suggesting that if you prioritize God, you mistreat people. Okay, I've heard some people justify their mistreating of people by that. That's a wrong application. And you'll notice that Jesus was very careful in what he said. He didn't go out and yell at anybody. He didn't go out and castigate them for their unbelief in front of everybody. There was none of that. He was careful. He was godly. He was sinless, as always. Okay, but you're going to have a clear understanding of your priorities. Okay, and understand what, listen to me, what is what. I say that a lot in Thailand. You must understand what is what. Okay, so I don't like the saying, and if you say it, I don't mean you any offense. I don't like the saying, my wife is my ministry. Okay, for me, my wife is my wife. Okay, ministry is ministry. My family is my family. Okay, these things have distinctives. They are their own thing. Okay, but what we must understand, and this may be the most important thing you'll take away from here this morning, good things, and this is in my book, good things or God things are never in competition with each other. Now, you might feel like it is sometimes, and that probably has to do with your struggle of managing all of that. Okay, but God never sets good things against each other. Do you understand that? He doesn't say, I give you the family and I give you the ministry, so, you know, pick one. One wins and one loses. No, that's you. That's your thinking. That's not the Lord. The Lord never does that. Now, we all know stories of people who, in hindsight, have looked back and have regretted maybe they were not home enough. You know, I know those people like you do. I've sat with them, and I know all those stories. We all know people who maybe struggle to understand sometimes, you know, how much to this and how much to this. What I want you to understand, that's not the Lord. He's not pitting good things against each other. He never does that. Okay, you never have to decide between the family and the church. Okay, they go together. It's not one or the other. They're complementary. The service of the Lord is complementary. And that's what you, because what happens is our enemy likes to reframe it. You know, what he says is, hey, come down and play ball with me. Here's the rules. And when you get down and you start playing on his field under his rules, you realize you can't win this way. These rules don't allow you to win. So what he will do, he tries to put in your head that, you know, you have to pick this or this. Well, no, you don't. You'll have to prioritize some things. But there are not that this loses because this wins. Okay, is there sacrifice? Of course there's sacrifice. Of course there's sacrifice. There's no denial of that. Is there some unique challenges for children when parents are in the ministry? Of course there is. But listen, there's some unique blessings as well. It goes both ways. Yes, there's some challenges, but there's some blessings. Yes, there's some hard things, but there's some super great things as well. It isn't God pitting one thing against another. And what you've got to do, you've got to pray that the Lord would help you to be able to know what you do when and how the balance of all that works. Okay? There's no failure with God in this. It's not a design flaw. Right? There's no mistake here. You can do all of it. You can be in the ministry and have blessing. You can, at the same time, have a blessed family. You can, at the same time, have a good marriage. Okay, it isn't. And you'll hear people often want to blame things that is not really fair to blame. You know, they'll say, well, this caused it. And maybe sometimes it comes down to our management of those things. It's not, there's no issue there with the way God set that up. It's complementary. Okay, you don't have to pick one above the other, but you do need to have priorities. So I used to notice when I was started out in the ministry, my unsaved family would always call me and say, hey, just letting you know that, you know, Auntie so-and-so is in town and we're having a big family get-together. So we're meeting at so-and-so's house at 10:30 on Sunday morning. And I would say, I can't come. Why can't you come? Well, because I have church, you know, and I'm the pastor. You know, well, can't you just miss for 1 week? Well, can't you change the time? Yeah. No, I'm not coming at 10:30 or 11 or 11:30 on Sunday morning. If you're still there after lunch, I'll be glad to call in, and I'd love to see everybody, and I want to be there, but I'm not doing this. And sometimes there's a deliberate attempt to try to keep putting that in front of you. And so you've got to have some priorities there. Now, do it courteously and do it nicely. You know, don't get in the flesh. But you've got to work out what your priorities are. Everybody is better when we all put the Lord first. Do you understand that? So if you want to help your wife, here's how you help your wife. Do everything you can do to further her spirituality. So don't tell her, no, you can't go to ladies' Bible study because, you know, I don't want to take care of the kids. Or don't. Every opportunity you've got to invest in your wife's spirituality, you should do. Because the closer she is to Jesus, the better she is for you. Right? When her heart is good for God, her heart is good for you. Okay? And everybody is better when we're close to the Lord. So you want to be encouraging the people around you to do the God thing at every opportunity they can. And that there's some sacrifice with that. Sometimes, you know, you have to step away and, you know, take a hit on that. You know, there's some sacrifice. My wife always gets a little, you know, she'll say, I don't know why so-and-so, well, this is in Thailand, does not let his wife come out to the Bible study when they live on the property and it's like, 100 steps. And I said, well, the reason is he doesn't want to take care of the kids. And what do I think of that? I think he's crazy. I think he's nutty. I think he's selfish. Because I think he should let her go. And I don't care you don't like taking care of the kids. You can do it for an hour and a half for the sake of helping your wife grow in her faith and get closer to the Lord. The closer she is to Jesus, the better she is for you. Right? The closer your people are to the Lord, the better your church is. Okay? If your church family has a heart tender to God, they don't fight with each other. Okay? There's a prevailing sense of unity and love. They're good when they're good with God. So your job as a leader of a church, if you do that, is to facilitate a place where people can grow in faith and be close to the Lord. To provide a place like that where they can be at their best spiritually, because that's also best for the whole church, right? And typically when someone gets out of sorts with God, what's the next thing that happens? They get out of sorts with people. Okay, that's the next thing that happens. And you might even say, look, I don't think you're really right with the Lord. Yes, I am. Usually when someone says, yes, I am, it's for sure, no, they're not. If you said that to me, I'm not really sure you're right with the Lord. I'd probably go, did you see something? Is there something I should be aware of? I'm not going to just bat that away. I'll at least consider it. I may decide I don't think you're right, or you are right, but I won't just bat it away. It's too important. So doing what you can do to keep the people around you closest to the Lord will help you to be able to do the things that you're supposed to do. But regardless of all of that, you need to prioritize the Lord. You need to do that. Okay, what is wonderful is when you have the kind of situation, and I feel blessed about this, I never have to, I don't have to ask my wife's permission to go out and serve God. A long time ago, we both agreed that he comes first. We both agreed that he's the number one. Okay? He's God. And I'm a husband and she's a wife and we love each other. But he's God. He's God. He's first. He's first in everything. And we both want it to be that way. And I want my church, I want them to be that way. I want them to say, he's God. He's God. He's first. He's first in everything. You know what the tithe is? It's the first. It's not just 10%. It's the first 10%. It's first. It's when you say, okay, Lord, I got the rent and I got this and I got this and I'm not even sure how I'm going to pay this. But anyway, before we even look at that, Lord, you're first. This is first. This is yours. That's what you do. He's first. Okay, Sunday is not the last day of the week, it's the first day of the week. He's first. And it's about keeping him in the right place and helping the people around you to keep him in the right place. And so, in conclusion, there were some tests here and this came from family. I don't know, you might have been there on the day and say, wow, boy, that's not going to go down well. You didn't even go out and see them. Man, you're going to lose your family. I don't know what's going on. The Bible said neither did his brethren believe on him. And he knew that. And then you get all the way through to Acts chapter 1 and verse 14. And there they are in verse 14. These all continued with one accord in prayer and supplication with the women and Mary, the mother of Jesus, and with his brethren. And now they're saved. And now they understand, and now they're saying, thank you, Jesus, that you did not put us first. Thank you that you did not listen to us. Thank you that you did what God asked you to do, or we would not be here today. And when you put God first, it's good for everyone. When you do what God would have you to do, that blessing will flow through to everybody else. But if you ever elevate someone above God, that is not good for them. Are you listening? It's not good for them, and it's not good for you. That's probably a relationship that's going to end in grief. Never elevate any person above God, and never make a mistake confusing who is a person and who is God. Now, let me give you this for free, because we're all men here. Your wife is not going to meet every need in your life. She's not God. And God will not allow her to be God. And God will make sure that you have some needs that only He can meet. He'll be certain of that. Because He won't allow, and she needs to understand, I love you, I'm here for you, I'll do everything I can for you, but I'm not God. And a lady makes a terrible mistake thinking a husband can meet every need in her life. You cannot. You cannot. You'll go crazy trying. You can meet some of them, but there's some things that God has reserved unto Himself, and He will not give that to anybody else. There's some things you can only get from Him. You're not going to get from anyone else. You're going to have some situations where you're going to reach out to friends and you're going to seek out your traditional sources of comfort, and it's just not going to comfort you. And it's the Lord saying, there's only one thing to do here, and you're going to have to come to Me, because they're not going to be able to help you. And I will not permit them to help you. You're going to have to come to Me. This is you and Me. And you're going to have to learn that you lean on Me. And you're going to have to learn that in these times you come to Me. Okay? And you have to understand this before you go out. All right, that's all I want to say, Pastor, this morning.